In this hour, the Publishers Association of South Africa has launched an anti-piracy campaign on 4 March 2024 to highlight the wide-ranging effects of illegal downloading, sharing and using the pirated material. PASA's anti-piracy campaign seeks to raise awareness across print and social media channels with the cooperation of South African universities. It also looks out to combat the intellectual property theft, safeguard the rights of authors and publishers, ensure the creators are fairly compensated for their contributions to literary landscape. To tell us more about this anti-piracy campaign, we're joined by Juta's CEO, Brian Wafarowa, and he joins us now on Zoom. Is Brian already connected to us? Brian, good evening to us. Good evening to the show, and thank you so much for joining us this evening.
Good evening, and good evening to your listeners as well. Thanks for having us.
So, an anti-piracy campaign. Please tell us a little bit more about this, and what does it mean?
Perhaps a little background will help explain this. We have had illegal usage of copyright material in the form of textbooks before, but up to about 2019, it was manageable because there were more students buying books than those that were copying. So the industry remained sustainable. But when the NSFAS decided to hand over money that was issued as book tokens before, hand it over to students as cash, we had a situation where the same students would then use the money for other needs, yep, and other delights and not necessarily the textbooks. And then they would still use the material, but they resorted to illegal copying and sharing and distribution. So we felt that we would run a campaign. In other countries, there are severe penalties for that, both for universities and students. But we thought we would start with an educational campaign around the effects of illegal usage of material.
So we have that situation, and I see that you've had the cooperation of universities. What was the sort of narrative that you went to the universities with that got you the cooperation?
I think the narrative that we went through with is that a textbook is an essential input into the learning process, because it's not just books. These are curated learning tools that put together the curriculum, both for the teacher and the student. And the textbook plays a very critical role, especially in South African universities, where the throughput at first year is as low as 14%. So we think a textbook has an important role to play. But we were in a situation where the industry was beginning to find it almost impossible to continue curating these books and contributing to the knowledge sector. Because sometimes when you go back to an author and say, the information is dated, let's do a new edition, or because the teaching approach has changed, the curriculum has changed, such an author would say, why would I do a new edition when I got nothing out of the first edition? So we were getting to a point, where it's no longer viable for the authors and the publishers to continue supporting education the way we used to do. I think that was a compelling message. Yeah.
I imagine, though, somebody might say, Brian, that, you know, Juta's doing this and it's great, but also they're also protecting their bottom line in this whole situation as a provider of textbooks and other paraphernalia needed at the university. Would that be a fair assessment of the situation?
It wouldn't be. You defined me as the CEO of Juta, that's correct. But I'm also speaking to you as the chairman of the Publishers Association, representing more than 200 member companies, which includes small enterprises, medium enterprises, and large companies. And the situation is the same. Let me just illustrate how dire and unfair the situation is. Some of you may know about Adams and Adams, which was a bookseller that was more than 100 years old in South Africa. they had to close down because nobody was really buying the textbooks. And some of you may know Protea Books, which was the second largest bookshop in the country. And it also folded. The ones that remain now are also in dire straits. And bear in mind that in a country that has difficulties with literacy and education throughput, these bookshops were not only textbook type of bookshops. They used the bedrock of textbook to sustain the distribution of other materials, including general reading material. So as Juta, we are better off than many companies because academic, where the crisis is deep, is probably just one of the areas in which we work. We are also the leading publishers of legal resource materials for professionals. So we are better off than many. So it's really not about the bottom line. We can take care of the bottom line elsewhere. But our academic work, like in other companies, has been affected to a point where many publishers have had to retrench workers. And I don't think it's palatable in a country where we're battling with unemployment.
Yeah. So it illustrates my point that there is a commercial side to all of this that suffers. Whether you know, you explain it by saying that it is, you know, the way that you've just explained it now, or it is about losing the bottom line as a company. I mean, companies must make a profit.
Yeah, that's correct. We won't shy away from that. We're not selling illicit goods, so we defend that position. But what I'm also trying to say is that, in addition to that, there are also authors who, some of them, this is their retirement plan. This is their livelihood. And they cannot make it under these circumstances. There's also quite a significant implication for education. Because I think there was a study that I cannot reference correctly now that indicated that there was a direct correlation between this development within the NSFAS and declining student outcomes at university level.
Yeah.
So the implications are multifaceted, including the bottom line, as you correctly state.
So no, I agree. I think there is evidence to prove that the focus of many students once this development took place was a little distracted because people had money in their hands that they could use in any way. So what is, and I know that there are other situations where this anti-piracy campaign wants to sort of bring awareness to, but what is the call then by this campaign with regards to the arrangement where NSFAS has given money to students directly instead of making sure that it goes directly to the purchasing of their study material?
I think the program is multi-pronged. One aspect of it is the educational campaign that we are carrying out. The other is to advise students and lecturers on the option that they have with regard to access to learning materials, because we are sympathetic to the economic conditions that we all are going through. And part of it is to say lecturers and universities can indeed license materials as per need, including limiting what they use. They don't have to use the whole textbook. The RRO, which is the Reproduction Rights Organization, DAURO, is there to license these materials into Cospex that universities can use. There is also the licensing that they can carry out with companies. But we are also making a direct appeal to the authorities in higher education and at NSFAS that there is a direct link between the policy directive to give the money directly to students as opposed to book tokens and the development of rampant piracy among students. There's also another dimension that I would like to highlight. I was quite astonished that I came across a site, a group of law students across the country, sharing material openly and advising each other on how they can distribute materials among themselves. There is one leading blogger with more than a million followers actually running videos on how to avoid using your book stipend for books and then using it for other things whilst you pirate books for your education.
Sure.
Now, the question that I ask is a moral and ethical one to say, let me take the example of accounting students and law students. These are your attorneys and advocates for the future, engaged directly in what people regard as soft criminality or not criminality at all. These are your auditors, future auditors, engaged in the same way. So the question would be, when does it dawn on people that are going to take on such responsibilities that this is not proper? So the implications are quite far-reaching, if I can say.
Do you think that they are aware of the criminality of these actions? Or let me say, maybe not the criminality, but maybe the unethical nature of these actions. Do you think they are aware of them?
I don't think that they are. Hence the education campaign that we are carrying out. And we are very grateful to stations like yours that are helping take this campaign further, because through activities like this, people get to know that they are real victims of the activities that they carry out.
Give us a call. I mean, maybe you're an accounting student that is a follower of this very individual that Brian is talking about. Give us a call. Do you realize perhaps that you are perhaps engaged in some form of piracy? Give me a call. I'd love to hear from you. Is it that blatant, Brian? I mean, the way that I'm saying that those students that perhaps are getting the assistance from these pirated materials are in fact engaged in criminal activities.
It is actually true, because I think these activities can be categorized in different, can be placed in different categories. The first category is the personal use that somebody may engage in, like referencing and probably a couple of pages for the purposes of your assignment. There is provision for that under copyright law. It's not an offense to do so. So that's part of what we are letting people know about. The second one is the illegal use by an individual student who says, okay, I would like to use my money for something else. Let me make a copy. And they do a copy around it. The third one, which begins to constitute piracy, is one where somebody actually engages in a commercial activity using the asset that belongs to somebody else. So what they do, and we are seeing more of this among students, is that they actually make several copies as PDFs, and they don't distribute them freely. They actually sell them to whoever can pay.
Yeah.
Therefore, they are actually getting into the space of a real pirate, and piracy is about the diversion of a commercial activity of one legal entity to an illegal one. And we are seeing that happening a lot more among students. I would suggest that if you take any textbook in higher education, whether it's accounting or any other, and you Google it, you are sure to find it on 5 sites where it's available as an illegal copy.
And so what is the education there? I mean, I'm thinking you should be saying, listen, we're going to go and get the cops on you. We're going to arrest you. What is the education? What are you saying? What is the education saying?
I don't think, remember that when NSFAS decided to give the money to students instead of token, their argument, which I didn't find convincing, is to give the students an opportunity to take financial responsibility, what is allocated to them. And I think 4 years has taught us that that's not what's happening. Because I don't know if you saw that advert that came out of a Pretoria booze shop, which went ENSFAS, Imalise Ingenile. And the idea was, you have received your money, here are promotions on booze, and that's how bad it is.
Really, eh? So, there was an advert directed at students to say that when the NSFAS money has come in, come and buy booze from us.
Yeah, that's the promotion. I can also give you another example. It's anecdotal, but it speaks to the whole issue of affordability. There was a student in the Eastern Cape who accidentally received 14 million from NSFAS.
Yes.
And they blew about 200,000 in about a week's time. And if you look at all the shops that they visited there, they visited every luxury entity they could visit except a bookshop. Now, here is a student with access to 14 million, and they get everything else other than what you would ask.
If you've got 14 million bucks, the last thing on your mind, class, right?
Don't get me wrong. I'm very sympathetic to that problem. So what we are also saying is to work with the universities to create licensing programs, to find ways through which they can work with us to make our learning support materials more accessible to students, cheaper and more conveniently, in order to avoid the rampant copying that is going on. But we are also saying to higher education and NSFAS, this is a direct result of a policy misdirection that we feel they have a responsibility to correct, together with us, of course.
Yeah. You would have heard that the board of NSFAS has in the last hour or two been dissolved. Board of NSFAS has been dissolved now. Is that going to be a problem for your campaign?
It won't be a problem. I think it's an opportunity for a new start. It's not like we started this campaign yesterday. We started it long back in terms of these engagements. But what was frustrating was when you felt like you had made progress, NSFAS would be hit by instability after instability. So you ended up talking to new people all the time. So we hope there will be a new board, that there will be stability at NSFAS, and we will have partners that we can work with to come up with a sustainable model that would allow students to have textbooks and also allow an industry that we think has a critical role to play in education to survive.
Is the education sector, particularly universities, the only place that this campaign is directed at?
At the moment, it is, although all our materials that go to schools and to TVET colleges carry the same message. Let me also say we are focusing on higher education mainly because that's where the problem is acute. And it's, in my opinion, a direct result of mismanagement of the allocated funds. You may ask yourself, why is this not critical in schools? Why is it not critical in TVET colleges? The reason is simply because in schools, the budget for books is managed and ring-fenced, and it's used only for that. That is the same story in TVET. So there's no crisis of access in TVET. There's no crisis of access in schools. The crisis in access in higher education is directly explained through the mismanagement that we see.
I'm interested by the way that you characterize the crisis. You characterize the crisis as a crisis of access, right? Is it really a crisis of access, or is it a crisis of the wrong utilization of funds that are supposed to give you correct access?
Yeah, in the end, if you look at the way the problem is discussed, it's discussed as a problem of access. But when you get into greater elucidation like you are doing now, you really begin to see that it's actually a crisis of mismanagement, but it manifests itself as limited access because we are dealing with those students that are pirating the copies, but there are also those that do not have access to books because they don't want to pirate and they cannot afford to buy. And there is also those that buy. And those that continue to buy books are fewer and fewer. The economies of scale are actually slashed. In the late 90s, early 2000s, you could print 10,000 copies and your unit cost would be very low.
Yeah.
And you would transfer that low cost in the pricing to students. Today, you can hardly sell 1,000 copies, and those 1,000 copies become very expensive because unit cost is very high.
Hello?
Sorry?
Brian, go ahead. Sorry, you were explaining the issue of the economies of scale there, yeah?
Yeah, I would then say you actually have three batches of students that are affected. There are those that are copying illegally, and usually they infringe on dated material because the new materials that are coming through are probably better protected, and usually it's the old materials, so they are not getting the best of the material. Then you have the students that cannot afford because the books are expensive. And the books are expensive because the unit costs are high, because there are fewer and fewer books that are being printed. And those students that are buying at a much higher price because the economies of scale are dwindling. So that's where it becomes a crisis for everybody. But at the core of this crisis, I would say, is mismanagement of the funds that are meant for textbooks.
So it sounds like a systemic problem. It isn't just a matter of a few rogue individuals that are unethical in the way that they do things. It sounds to me like it is a greater systemic issue. What in the education is offered as a remedy?
What we offer as a remedy is the various ways through which students can have access to materials, including licensing, including packages that universities can make for their students as cost breaks. But I think the biggest lever here, this crisis can be turned around immediately if NSFAS was to rethink its policy directive and issue a new directive that says, just like they allocate money to fees, they should allocate and protect the money they offer for textbooks. I don't think that authors and publishers can be expected to carry that burden, which is a burden that has already been covered by state taxpayers. But the state is failing to manage, at least NSFAS is failing to manage that money properly and avert this crisis.
Brian Wafawarua is my guest. He is both the CEO for Jutas, but you said you're also the chairperson of which organization, please, Brian?
Of the Publishers Association of South Africa.
The Publishers Association of South Africa. So I imagine it's not just Juta that you are representing in this conversation. It's more the Publishers Association of South Africa.
Yes, the campaign is by the Publishers Association of South Africa, and we have more than 200 members who are both small, medium, and large enterprises.
Let me take a quick break, and let's see if we can't take just a few calls from our listeners as they engage with you and some of the ideas you've put across. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, we continue our conversation with our guest. I see some calls are starting to come through. Please join us as we continue.
Kwandu on 702.
Brian Wafawarua is my guest, and we are talking about a campaign that the Publishers Association of South Africa has embarked on to educate you and I about certain practices that we could call unethical. Some people are calling them piracy. The illegal downloading, sharing, and using of pirated material, learning material. And while there is sympathy around the economic reasons why perhaps there are issues of access to certain learning material, it appears that we need to be bold and say that some of these issues are just about mismanagement. Yeah? Yes, there are systemic results, and you know, we can have that conversation, but ultimately we can immediately deal with this issue at a at the level of the mismanagement of this process. And you would have heard Brian give some ideas as to how we can deal with this. Piri is in Alex, and he joins us on the line. Piri, hi.
Hi, good evening, Prof, and your guest. Thank you, man.
Yeah, go ahead.
I think, you know, while I also sympathize with your guest there in terms of the livelihoods of the people being lost, you know, I think the education landscape is really changing in a very big way. And it may seem like, you know, their service is no longer as important as it used to be, because all the learning materials are really available online almost for free. So you got YouTube, you got all these you know, social media platforms that really you know, have all the information that students would often need when they need to study a certain discipline without really needing a textbook for themselves. So I really think that maybe they need to try to come up with some sort of innovative ways on how they would want to assist the students in the quest to, you know, accessing the knowledge that they would like them to access, instead of the old ways of, you know, putting a textbook together and selling it to the students, perhaps.
Yeah, Piri, but what about the costs incurred in the in the production of that information, in the compilation of that information, in the packaging of that information? I mean, what would you say about that?
Yeah, see, that's the thing. I think it requires of them to come up with innovative ways to see to it that the knowledge that they would like to impart, they're able to get some sort of a benefit out of it. Because, you know, like I'm saying, the information is out there almost for free. So it's not as important to get a hard copy textbook in my hand to study a certain course as it used to be. So even if they put a lot of costs and a lot of time in putting out the textbook together, the thing is, it's not as needed. So, I think so, bro.
Piri and Alex, much appreciated. Brian, how do you respond?
Yeah, I think Piri has some important points to raise, and I think publishers are aware of that. But it still goes back to the conundrum, the fact that despite all the free materials that he's talking about, which are legally free, the students still infringe on textbooks, which means those textbooks are still essential for their education.
Yeah.
There are many open education resources that people have access to. Many people are publishing under a free license, and those materials are available, but there are still those materials that are protected by people who still see value that is confirmed in the market, and people should not infringe on those. It turns the argument that the old way of doing things does not work and people do not see any value because there is a lot of material available. There wouldn't be infringement if that material was as valuable. We are talking here about curated education tools that speak to the curriculum and the needs of the student. But let's take it further and say there is a need to innovate. There is a lot of innovation that is going on, including almost the Spotifying of content, where you can pay for that content as you use it, and you don't have to outlay a lot of material money in order to do that. There are also new innovative ways of learning, including education platforms that we all need to invest in order to make learning easier. But that further investment in new ways of learning, particularly in South Africa, where the education outcomes are not that good, are not possible in a situation where the creators of that materials are not realizing fair return on their investment. So yes, Piri has an important point around innovation, and many companies are individually innovating as they see fit. But that doesn't negate the fact that the materials that are copied illegally are copied because they are essential and relevant.
Is there need to investigate and to perhaps scrutinize a little bit of the paradigms that are out there about education, the access to education, and therefore the materials that provide us with the content for that education? Is there perhaps a conversation to be had, Brian, around the paradigm that says you as publishers want to provide information versus I as a student need that information? Is there perhaps a confluence at some level of those two ideas that perhaps needs to be clarified?
I think there certainly is. I think a few years ago, publishers went further than where universities were in terms of innovation. And some of them realized that they had gone probably too many steps ahead of where the universities are, because even when you innovate and you develop learning materials that are digitally driven with analytics and all the whistle and bells, you still stumble upon the issue of cost. But sometimes the ability of universities to utilize material given their own digital technology journey doesn't allow them to. And I think the type of conversation that needs to happen now is to be realistic to where we are with regards to how students and universities can consume those materials. So one of the conversations that I think needs to take place is one that says these materials are required. What is the best format in which these materials can be presented to universities by publishers, and what type of licensing agreements can be entered into? Because I can assure you that if everybody plays the game fairly, these costs can come down significantly, but because everybody is contributing, the publishers are working in a more viable environment, the production of the materials become cheaper because they are distributed to more students. And that is the type of conversation that we think should come out of this campaign.
Is the environment conducive for that kind of conversation?
It needs to be. And
let me try and see if I'm asking it properly. My sense is that there is a very polarized educational space at the moment, both from administration, in other words, from government, NSFAS, the student movement, and business in that sector. In other words, you guys. Yes. That space is deeply polarized, and there is very little coming together and talking to find solutions. So everybody is speaking at each other, not to each other and with each other. My question is, even if the content were to be such that it provides the solutions, do we have the kinds of platforms that are encouraging that conversation to take place, given the tensions that you and I know of?
Yeah, I think this is a typical wicked problem, in the sense that what may be recommended as a solution creates some other problems. I don't think NSFAS and DHET do not realize that there was a policy miss and that what is happening is not right. But they now have to confront the students that are receiving this money and probably say it wasn't right to give you money that was meant for textbooks. But at the same time, what we are now trying to do is to say, it is not a publisher's problem alone. Yes, we will suffer the consequences of piracy, but I think education will suffer the same consequences. That's why we really feel that after 4 years of talking past each other after 4 years of some people saying, well, if education works and the private sector suffers, that's okay. I don't think education is working. I don't think it's working for the private sector as well. We are talking to the to intellectual property entities within government, and they are aware of what is going on here, and they are beginning to join us to say how do we try and resolve this. So I think we have gone past the luxury of talking past each other, because there is also another very confrontational approach that can happen, which helps nobody, which is to say there is a legal provision to the protection of these materials. There was a time when there was a Federation Against Copyright Theft, which looked into these transgressions and got people prosecuted, particularly where something was at a piracy level. That didn't stop much, or those individuals suffered consequences. We don't think that's the way to go, and that's why we are trying to talk to everybody before we get to that unhelpful stage.
So, where to from here?
Where to from here? We, as publishers, we continue to try and innovate and find ways through which we can get the same learning materials to students in a manner that is sustainable. Publishers are also working on digital rights management tools that try to protect their materials. But we intend to talk again to NSFAS and the Department of Higher Education, particularly in the context of the leadership changes that are taking place, so that this can be taken forward. We are talking to universities like UNISA, who are acknowledging that there is something that is happening among students that are organized in their name as a university. And therefore, there is a bit of an obligation on their part to work with us. And I must say, the type of reception that we are getting is promising.
Do you think, though, that there can be a stalemate, the stalemate between the stakeholders, that is government, maybe even NFSS itself? When I say government, I'm talking about the Department of Higher Education specifically, but NFSS and student movements, student organizations. Do you think that stalemate of conversation can be broken, where you guys can come around a table and have these conversations? Because I'm thinking that many of the things that you've said today are reasonable. I mean, I understand that you speak from the position of the constituency that you are speaking for, but what you say sounds reasonable. Do you think that stalemate can be broken?
We are hoping so, and we think it can be broken, because we are not only highlighting the problem, we are also suggesting solutions going forward. And we are also really elevating the role that they can play. We think NSFAS is the biggest lever that we can pull here, but there are many, many other things that we are intending to do. I don't think that even the universities can stand against an argument that says authors and publishers need a fair remuneration for their work, because universities charge fees, lecturers earn salaries for the services that they render. And it stands to reason that those that supply materials and tools that are used in the education system also need a reasonable return on their effort in order to continue investing in education. So it's a message that should appeal to everybody, because it creates sustainability for every player in the sector. So we therefore think that we have a reasonable message, and it's landing on reasonable ears, and we should be able to take it forward.
Brian Wafa-Waroa is my guest, and he is not only the CEO of Juta, but the chairperson of the Publishers Association of South Africa. I want to thank you very much for agreeing to talk to us. How do people get in touch with you if anybody from any of those sectors were to call us and say, listen, we listened to that conversation, we think we could have a conversation with PASA? How do they get in touch with you?
I think they can go to PASA's website, which is www.publishsa.co.za. They can also Google PASA, and they will be able to get to the website where there is all this literature and contact details of the executive office at PASA, including the current office bearers.
Brian Wafa-Waroa, thank you so much for joining us. Much appreciated.
And I also thank you very much for this opportunity. It was comprehensive, and I think it's part of the education campaign. So we appreciate the role that you are playing in this regard. Thank you.